Hi, everybody. Geraldo here. Welcome to Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. If this is your first time listening, thank you very much for tuning us in. Every week or so, I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions on the air, on the latest news. There's so much to talk about now in the age of Trump. You can have show notes if you need them. They can be found on my website, geraldo.com. Come back often. Feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Geraldo Rivera and on Facebook, Geraldo Rivera. All these links are in the show notes. Again, thanks for tuning us in. Here now the show. Hi, everybody. It's Geraldo Rivera, and this is the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. This is a slushy, snowy Thursday in New York City, February the 9th. We are taping this. The big news is still the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the appellate court, is now reviewing. They are pondering whether or not the lower court, the district court, the judge in the Ninth Circuit, the judge stopped, as you know, the refugee ban that had been imposed by the Trump administration, a travel ban on seven Muslim majority nations, and plus a total pause of any refugees coming in from Syria. And the court is now deciding whether or not the judge was right to temporarily stop the Trump administration from stopping travelers from these seven countries and refugees from Syria. I listened to the arguments. It's interesting. I listened to the arguments. And I want to talk just on the merits of this case first, on whether or not the Trump administration has the authority to stop people coming from the seven majority Muslim countries and the refugees coming in from Syria. To start right there, does the president of the United States have the legal and constitutional right to stop immigrants from particular countries and stop refugees specifically from a country like Syria from coming in? There is clearly, and has been since the early 1950s, a law on the books that gives the president broad discretion when it comes to immigration policy. But that does not mean for a second that the president of the United States can do something unconstitutional. In other words, I remember very clearly when the presidential candidate, Donald Trump, wanted to stop Muslims from coming in totally, and specifically from these conflict zones. And a lot of people, a lot of lawyers like myself and former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, were of the opinion back then that you could not stop Muslims from coming in. Why? Because the First Amendment of the United States Constitution prohibits specifically the discrimination against anyone based on religion. So you can't stop all Muslims from coming in any more than you could stop all Jews from coming in, or all Christians or Buddhists or Hindu, whatever. You have no right to pass a law that gives you the legal justification to violate the Constitution of the United States. So the whole issue before the Ninth Circuit and before the judge who made the ruling is whether or not this refugee ban and this ban from these seven Muslim majority nations is really a ban on Muslims. Is that what the president was trying to do? Now, that's an issue of fact. I'm not giving you my opinion that Trump really wanted to stop all Muslims or wanted to, you know, really just stop people coming from this geographical area, which clearly is violence riddled. That's an issue of fact for a finder of fact. Whether they litigate that before a judge or a three-judge panel or a jury, I think the courts will decide where they go from here. Right now, the issue is whether or not this federal judge on the West Coast was right to stop the president from stopping the refugees and the immigrants. I think, because of what I told you just now about Rudy Giuliani and me and others giving our opinion that you can't do it religiously, a religious-based test, but you can do a geographic test, I think the judge was correct that the Trump administration was really trying to stop the Muslims, the Islamic extremists that he's always talking about. Clearly, President Trump has no interest in stopping Christian refugees from coming in. In fact, he has been heard to say that Christians, and he's right, are the most persecuted group in the Middle East right now. My point is, I think the judge was right that Trump was trying to stop Muslims from coming in, and he was right to stop this ban, and I think the issue of fact has to be decided. But in the meantime, who has irreparable damage? If you heard the arguments before the Ninth Circuit, and I listened to them, as I said, pretty closely, I thought the federal government, the Department of Justice, the associate attorney general who made the argument, really was pretty lame in saying that the United States government or the United States of America will suffer irreparable harm from the temporary stopping, blocking of the president's immigration ban. Where's the irreparable harm? Well, the government could say, well, there could be a terrorist among the group that's coming in. The court will say, what evidence do you have of that? What evidence do you have that any of the people on this list of refugees who've been stopped are actually suspected terrorists? Do you have any evidence of that whatsoever? I think as you listen to this and you ponder, you agree with me that that's a very hard, very heavy lift for the federal government. They're going to have a hard time pointing out to Abdullah is coming in next Thursday, and he's suspected of membership in ISIS. You're not going to be able to do that. You have 7-year-old girls getting heart transplants who are coming in. You have parents being reunited. The states, on the other hand, what is their irreparable harm if this ban is imposed and the refugees are kept out and the immigrants are kept out? The states have lots, and they have proven in that oral argument that I mentioned before the Ninth Circuit that they are really being harmed by the ban. How are they being harmed? Yet kids coming in who are supposed to go to the hospital in Washington State or Minnesota, you have families that have been separated, you have students in state institutions, universities and so forth, that can't get in because of that could not get in during the refugee ban. You know, there's no doubt that the states had damage, immediate damage, irreparable damage, if the refugee immigration ban was allowed to be imposed. So if you listen to the arguments, the federal government did a lame job, my characterization. The states did a much better job in showing irreparable damage. The district court judge was correct, Geraldo says. And I think the Ninth, and by the time you hear this, of course, the Ninth Circuit will have ruled. I think the Ninth Circuit will sustain the judge and will sustain the blocking of the Trump administration immigration and refugee order. So, and I think what will happen now is they will litigate. They will litigate who's right factually. And the finder of fact will decide, and then that'll be your decision. But until then, this blocking by the federal judge of Trump's immigration order will be sustained until it can be litigated. So I give this one to the courts. But there are a couple other things going on. First of all, people are complaining about, oh, this judge was a judicial activist. This judge went beyond, this shows you this runaway judge. It shows, how these federal courts have to be reined in and so forth. Why are people talking about this judge's judicial activism? Because he ruled in a way that politically is offensive to the people who support President Trump and the Republicans. If it had gone the other way, the other side would have said it was judicial activism. I remember specifically, exactly 2 years ago, February 2015, a federal judge in Texas blocked President Obama's immigration order. Now, President Obama's case, what he was doing was expanding the DREAM Act to include, exclusion from deportation of the parents of the DREAM Act kids. So Obama tried to do something that was liberal in terms of the immigration order by executive order, by just fiat, just writing an executive order. The federal judge in Texas, there was a lawsuit by the Republican state attorneys general, and the judge blocked the immigration order from President Obama. He blocked it. You didn't hear any of those Republicans complaining then that this was a judicial activist judge who stopped, who blocked Obama. But now they're complaining because the federal judge blocked Trump. Federal judges, if they think the Constitution of the United States is offended by some executive action, they're going to do what they're going to do. And now it's going to, you know, and for anyone to suggest that the courts of the United States, whether it's federal, state, or local, that they are not political, give me a break. Give me a break. I'm a lawyer. I've been before many, many judges. And believe me, if you don't know the liberal judge from the conservative judge, the way this judge usually rules on these kinds of cases and the way the other judge usually rules on this kind of cases, then you're not a very good lawyer. Politics doesn't stop at the courtroom steps. Why do you think the Supreme Court choice is so important? Because there is a belief that if you pick a conservative judge, that judge, when he's on the Supreme Court of the United States, will be conservative. Pick a liberal judge based on his track record, that he's going to, when he gets to the high court, he's going to be a liberal or a moderate or so forth. That's why it's so bitterly contested, these Supreme Court nominations. Which brings me to Neil Gorsuch, the appellate court judge who's been nominated by Donald Trump to go to the Supreme Court of the United States. Gorsuch was with various Democratic senators yesterday. He's trying to schmooze them because he needs, you know, he needs 10 of them to get to 60 votes so he can be confirmed by the Senate of the United States to take this lifetime appointment to the high court. So he's brown-nosing the Democratic senators. So he was, according to Richard Blumenthal, the senator, the Democratic senator from Connecticut, Gorsuch at the meeting with Senator Blumenthal said he lamented that it was so political, and he said that he was disheartened and demoralized by the statements Donald Trump said, because Donald Trump was saying how the judge that stopped his immigration order was being political and he's a so-called judge and so forth. So Neil Gorsuch, Trump's very nominee to the high court, is criticizing Trump for criticizing judges. So I think a couple of things. First of all, politically speaking, I think it's brilliant of Neil Gorsuch to say that. Why? He already has Trump's vote. He already has the Republican senator's vote. He needs 10 Democrats to help him get confirmed to the Supreme Court of the United States. So when he says that Donald Trump's political utterances about the court are disheartening and demoralizing, and that he's disillusioned, that has to play well with these Democrats. Oh, yeah, that guy sounds pretty reasonable to me, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, yeah, that Gorsuch, he's not a big, that's an independent. He's going to get on that high court and he's going to defy Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump's the one that nominated him to the high court. So it's good politics. But in terms of Gorsuch in substance, complaining about Donald Trump talking about an activist judge as if it were, you know, some absolutely slanderous, malicious remark, I say, wah, wah, why do, how whiny can you get? Of course the president's allowed to speak out about a judge if he gets an adverse ruling. I mean, what is the judge going to hear Donald Trump criticizing him and then switch from being a liberal to being a conservative? Come on. This is the real world we're talking about. This is the real world. Donald Trump has a right to be critical of a judge who stops this this policy. Now, I am absolutely opposed to the Trump order, but I could see how Trump would be pissed off that the judge is stopping him from enacting this this executive order. I can, of course, Trump has a vision. He needs a refugee ban in his mind. He needs a ban on immigration from these conflict zones. And he wants very much, he's promised the American people he's going to get it. He wrote the executive order. And now some district judge on the West Coast, the liberal West Coast, is stopping him. Of course he's going to be angry and frustrated about it. You know, he's not like Barack Obama in the sense that Barack Obama, you know, was like, you know, oh, my God, his hand to his forehead. The woe is me. The federal judge has blocked my constitutional order. Trump's different. Ah, the federal judge, so-called judge. That's just a different style. We have to grow up. You know, it just seems to me that the people who are critical of Donald Trump are making everything an Armageddon. Everything's the end of the world. Anything Donald Trump does is the end of the world. Like this thing with Nordstrom, the department store, and his daughter Ivanka, and Nordstrom announcing, I guess yesterday or sometime earlier this week, that they would no longer carry Ivanka's items in Nordstrom's, the big department store chain. And the reason they give is declining sales since they announced it a year ago. And the issue is, here's Donald Trump tweeting about Nordstrom being very unfair to Ivanka, his daughter. And a lot of people, I just did the Outnumbered program on Fox, a lot of people are saying Trump should shut up and not interfere. That's a conflict of interest when he gets involved, that he gets engaged in his daughter's business. I say that's BS. Also, if that was my daughter and she was working hard in a department store, and because of my editorial position on television, my daughter was harmed in her business because of that association with me, and you don't expect me to be angry about it? Don't expect me to speak out about it? Oh, he's president. It's not presidential. He's a dad. He's a dad. He loves his daughter. And he suspects, as I, Geraldo Rivera, suspect, that Nordstrom's decision was not based on sales. It was based on, they said, we don't need this heartache. What do we need Ivanka's items in stores when it's going to attract trouble and negative attention and a bad vibe? And plus, President Trump's politics are different than our politics and so forth. You know, they made a decision that wasn't a business, or it was a business decision, I guess, in the broader sense. But I doubt it. I mean, we'll find out. I doubt it's based on declining sales. I hear from stores like Macy's and Bloomingdale's that Ivanka's doing terrific. I did Celebrity Apprentice the last season with Donald Trump. One of our tasks was to set up these instant stores around Manhattan selling Ivanka's items. Nordstrom's was all over that episode of Celebrity Apprentice. They helped us set up the stores. They got us the stocks. It was for her shoes. And the whole idea was Nordstrom, the big department store, was everywhere in the country, but they were not here in Manhattan. They were opening their first outlet here in Manhattan in the Hudson Yards, the new hip, chic development on the west side of Manhattan over the old railroad yards. And they were so excited by Ivanka. This is January 2015. They were so excited that Ivanka was going to spearhead their new store with her shoes and her other items. My daughter Isabella worked on that task. There are four of her girlfriends. I bought them all shoes because the shoes were relatively inexpensive. They were modeling the shoes. Ivanka was there along with the Nordstrom's executives, who were so excited. They were so very excited about this big move to Manhattan. For them, after getting all that free press, to stab Ivanka in the back, that's what they did. And it really made me, it was very annoying to me. And if I'm annoyed, and I'm a casual friend of the family, imagine how the dad feels about it. And to say Donald Trump can't speak about it because it's not a conflict of interest. I mean, if he wants to be angry at Nordstrom's, he can be angry at Nordstrom's. And people to cover their ears, it gets me how everyone is so hyper-partisan that anything the other side does is, like I said, Armageddon. It's an atomic war. Remember this. The Republicans had over 40 votes to repeal and replace Obamacare. 40 votes. Even when the Democrats were in control, they were voting to repeal. They were doing filibusters. Remember Ted Cruz and so forth? They didn't cooperate with President Obama at all. And now the Republicans and the right wing are saying, come on, you Democrats, play nice, confirm our nominations, stop being obstructionist, play ball with the president, get the agenda passed and all the rest of that. Come on. That's not going to happen. And people say, look at Al Franken. He's such a radical from Minnesota. Look at Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, another left wing progressive radical. They're going to wreck the Democratic Party. What is the Democratic Party, folks? What is it? There is no Democratic Party anymore. The Democratic Party was basically disbanded on November 9th, the day after Election Day, when they performed so woefully, losing all those state houses and so forth. Al Franken and Elizabeth Warren, at least they got balls. At least they've got the spirit to fight. Let them fight. Let them fight. The Republicans fought and with Neil Gorsuch, who's a great guy, it seems to me. And I would definitely vote to confirm him if I were a senator. But don't go easy on him either. Remember Merrick Garland? Merrick Garland was so eminently qualified for the high court, President Obama's nominee, they wouldn't even give him a hearing. Over a year, they didn't give him a hearing. Now you want the Democrats to roll on Neil Gorsuch because he's a good guy? Or because he's saying stuff about how the president has demoralized him or disheartened him with his comments? I want him to fight, knife fight. You fight every step of the way. And the Republicans have to come to the conclusion that they've got the majority in the United States Senate. They've got the majority in the House of Representatives. They have the White House. Now's the time. They don't need the Democrats. Now's the time. Let's see your agenda, Republicans. Fight for it. Go for it. Like Obamacare. Where's the repeal and replace Obamacare that you voted on? You wasted all our time in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives over the years since 2009. Where's your bill? Where's your proposal, Republicans? Where's your Trump-o-care, whatever you're going to call it? Where is it? Do you have it? Do you have anything? You got nothing. You have nothing. Obamacare is going to be around for a long, long time. And even if you rename it, I doubt it's going to substantively change it all. But my point is this. Don't complain about Al Franken and Elizabeth Warren, because at least they've got guts. The Democrats are totally dysfunctional. They are frightened by Donald Trump. They are angry that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Let them act out. Let them. That's great. Let them have some spirit. Let them come back in the midterms and so forth. But don't expect bipartisanship, and don't expect, you know, suddenly because the Republicans are in power, the Democrats are going to play along. If they've got any character whatsoever, they'll fight Donald Trump every step of the way. And I'm saying that as a friend of Trump and as someone who agrees with many of his policies, obviously not all of them. But I really believe that, it's too silly for people to expect politics to be suspended just because you like the guy who happens to be in the Oval Office. It doesn't happen that way. So that's about all I want to talk about. I think that, Kellyanne Conway, who I knew, you know, for years as a guest on my various talk shows long before she went to work for President Trump. I think that she was right when she said, you know something, go out and buy Ivanka Trump's stuff at the store near you. That's like an act of it's not civil disobedience, but it's one of those kinds of acts. It's a political act. When you go buy Ivanka Trump's shoes or whatever apparel, whatever purses, whatever it is. That's a political act. So if you care about the Trumps, if you're in their corner, or if you care about just, you know, regardless of where you stand ideologically or politically, if you care about the unfairness, as I do, of a child being disadvantaged because of her dad's politics, then do the stand-up thing. Do the right thing. You know, go buy one of her things. The last note I want to make is, remember, Neil Gorsuch, the nominee for the high court, made those statements about the disheartening, demoralizing, disillusion, whatever it is, at this meeting, this private meeting with Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. When Blumenthal announced to the world what the Supreme Court nominee had said, what Gorsuch had said about being demoralized, Donald Trump attacked Senator Blumenthal and brought up the fact that Senator Blumenthal, who was in the United States Armed Forces during the Vietnam era but never served in combat, was guilty of embellishing his combat record. This is an old story. It's like Elizabeth Warren, she was a Native American. She claimed in her applications for college, and it turns out she has no Native American blood, and they call her Pocahontas now. Whenever Elizabeth Warren talks, Trump criticizes her about the Pocahontas thing. In Blumenthal's case, he's criticizing him about lying about his record. The voters in Connecticut have already given both of them a pass on both of these issues. And I really think that it belittles Donald Trump to attack these people for issues that have absolutely nothing to do with the issue at hand. Senator Blumenthal isn't talking about Vietnam right now. He was talking about what the Supreme Court nominee said to him about Donald Trump's comments about the district court judge. And to bring up Vietnam in that context is really unfair. It's like the Pocahontas thing with Elizabeth Warren. It's really unfair. She's not talking about reservations and Native American rights or stuff like that. She's talking about, you know, other issues. You can't attack someone every time for the worst thing that you know about them, even if it has nothing to do with what they're talking about. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of the unfairness or the harshness, let me put it that way, of Megyn Kelly's question to Donald Trump at the very first GOP primary debate, where she said, how does a man who calls women fat pigs and slobs, how can that person ever be president of the United States? I mean, that's like the worst thing Donald Trump ever said. So in the first debate, the first question, she asked the worst thing that Donald Trump ever did. You know, was it fair? Was it unfair? I mean, I could definitely see how that would make Donald Trump angry, and where, you know, he had the beef with Megyn Kelly that lasts for months and months. My point is, you don't always have to go there. The worst thing, the weakest link. If everybody who's going to speak out in public about anything now has to be fearful that the president of the United States is going to step off his lectern to criticize someone and rank them out about the worst thing it is about their character or about their past, about their history. Was he going to talk about me? I've been divorced 4 times. You know, it's just, it's not right. And that to me is far more demeaning, going after Senator Blumenthal's Vietnam record, particularly because Donald Trump did not serve either. Neither did I, but at least I became a combat correspondent for 40 years. And for him to go after Blumenthal on his GI record, I think is really beneath him. Trump, he shouldn't. You know, I want him to be unconventional. I want him to be, unrestrained. I want him to be a street fighter. I want him to be a swashbuckler, except with the nuclear stuff. But to go after everybody, an ad hominem attack, you only invite those kinds of attacks against yourself and your family. So don't do it. Thank you very much for listening. I hope your winter is going well. I'll give you another one of these in a couple of days. I'm Geraldo Rivera. See you soon.